listening to what's probably Franz Liszt's greatest hit, which isn't that easy to say.
Yeah, Franz Liszt's greatest hit. It used to be actually on the movies all the time in Europe. It was the music for the newscast before movie, theater.
Newsreels.
Uh-huh. Yeah. This was the newsreel music, so everybody knew it.
Uh-huh.
I mean, we're talking about early 20th century, right? Not not now, and mid 20th century. So this, I've done this piece so many times. I mean, it's a great, you know, very compact and very effective symphonic poem number 3, Le Prelude, which is the prelude. It's based on a poem, and you know, this is the prelude to the future. So you have this kind of like you know, opening a door or opening a gate kind of feeling with this piece. I think it's perfect to start a concert with.
And that's, we were saying this was his biggest hit, but he wasn't really known for his orchestration. Franz Liszt was known, he was sort of like the Elvis of his time in music. He was a rock star, but he was known for his piano virtuosity. So this was sort of new territory for him.
Yeah, I mean, he learned to orchestrate, well, among others, from Wagner, whose daughter he married.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, he didn't have an education, a formal education in that anyway, and he was an amazing piano player who transcribed, you know, he was also the radio host of the times because there was no radio.
Uh-huh.
So to spread the word about great music, you needed someone to go around and play it. So he would transcribe operas,
mm-hmm.
and play these fantasies based on popular operas or not so popular ones to make them popular. So his work was really important, and he produced a lot of work. I mean, he really composed a lot, and very unique sound Liszt has, and his orchestration is also like I don't see it with any other composers, and it's very well written actually for orchestra.
Yeah, and he was sort of fresh and new and trailblazing. We don't think like a standard piece like this. It's one of, you know, this is the CD that's on. It's one of these just compilation CDs. It shows up a lot. But it was fresh and new and different.
Absolutely. Since we are playing Bartók Violin Concerto No. 2, I wanted to have an opening that connects Bartók's oeuvre with Brahms, because we're playing Brahms Symphony No. 1 in the second half. So I think Liszt is right there in between. Liszt, who was a very important figure in, you know, the birth of Hungarian national music, and he himself declared himself a Hungarian composer, although he did not speak Hungarian. That's very interesting. His first language was German, and he spoke French fluently. But that was just the birth of nations in all around Europe, and Liszt just declared, okay, I am a Hungarian composer, and indeed his name, Liszt, L-I-S-Z-T, is spelled in Hungarian way, although his first name, Franz, is the German spelling, what everybody uses. And he was born on the border of Austria and Hungary, somewhere there in a very small village, and became very famous. He started the Academy of Music. He fundraised all the money. He put up a 1 year worth of money he made in 1 year to start the Academy of Music is where I studied. So,
what's the mascot?
I don't know, jumping conductors, I don't know, or rubber ducks. You have some rubber ducks here. Maybe it's the Hungarian rubber ducks. I don't know. Red nose reindeer. I have no idea. No mascot. This is a very serious institution. Yeah. It's a walking base. I don't know what the mascot is.
Anyway, so Franz Liszt, the well-known Hungarian conductor, he sort of fell out of favor. I think during the time, what I'm getting the feeling that there was a lot of professional jealousy because he was so popular and the women loved him and he was so brilliant. I think his contemporaries sort of tried to dismiss him, saying he's all glitter and no gold. He's all flash and showmanship. But there really was a composer there.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Especially when you listen to his pieces that he wrote at a late age. They're very forward-thinking, and many of his piano pieces sound a lot like Bartók later, which tells you that he had a sense of what's coming and which direction the music was moving.
And it was Bartók who sort of rediscovered him, sort of brought him back into the limelight. He was part of that movement to recognize his talent.
Absolutely. Bartók himself was among the greatest pianists of his time. I don't know if anybody remembers that fact. He actually played his own piano concertos, his own piano pieces, chamber music. There are quite a few recordings now you can find online when he moved to the United States with mm-hmm. his wife, and they played two piano concerts and he played some recitals. Actually have a whole collection of those. And of course, he always played some Chopin and some Liszt. I mean, Liszt mm-hmm. Liszt is right there with Chopin as far as pianist concerned. So yeah, Bartók did play Liszt works and did learn a lot from him of how to write for piano and how to write like a piano concerto. I mean, Liszt was also groundbreaking, did groundbreaking work there with his two piano concertos.
We'll not be hearing a piano concerto on a Saturday evening at 7:30. It's a violin concerto by Béla Bartók. And see, this is one of the very few times in which I've been able to find all of the CDs on the program that Gregory Voita has programmed. Usually I have to do some scrounging, but I was able to find this Bartók Violin Concerto No. 2. And I pointed out to Gregory in our very sophisticated tracking system, which is a sticky note on the front of the CD, that the last time, or in fact the only time this CD was played was back in 1992. Why hasn't anybody played it?
It's difficult.
Okay.
It is a difficult piece. And I'm really happy to have Alina Vähälä this week, who played Mendelssohn with us a couple mm-hmm. of years ago. And she's just a great violinist. And I was so happy when she said yes to Bartók No. 2. Because, I mean, she's from Finland, you know. Apparently, Finns and Hungarians are related somehow. So mm-hmm. maybe...
Language-wise.
Maybe. Language-wise, yeah. maybe we speak the same musical language to a certain extent as well. And again, she's just an amazing violin player.
Let's listen to a little bit of this tricky piece. It's lovely, and I don't know why nobody has programmed it. Listen to it. Now, this is Pinchas Zukerman, the violin soloist. Thank you. I don't know why my colleagues haven't programmed this. It's way easier to play it on the radio than it is on the violin.
You are such a virtuoso on the radio. I'm just admiring your work here, watching yes. you work, yeah.
But yeah, we have a virtuoso violinist, Alina Vahala, who will be playing this, and I imagine she's going to be as fascinating to watch as she is to listen to with all the pyrotechnics here with the violin.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, this is a truly virtuoso piece of music, but as you heard, I mean, it's
lovely.
It is from the romantic, uh-huh. you know, era, you know, that with the folk tunes mm-hmm. incorporated into Western music and written in a very clever way with a lot of orchestra colors. And it's just a beautiful, it's a very touching piece. It has a beautiful second movement, a slow movement with a fast middle section, and then a very, very fast-paced waltz last movement, which is very demanding. It's, I mean, ensemble-wise, for, you know, a soloist, a conductor, and an orchestra, I would say that the third movement of the Bartók Violin Concerto number 2 is probably among the most difficult concerto movements there are.
Really? And the violinist that asked Bartók to write this wasn't happy with the original ending because I guess it wasn't showy enough for him. So he rewrote it for all the, you know, get the pyrotechnics in the end.
Yeah, yes, it's not the only piece Bartók has composed an alternate ending to. Concerto for Orchestra has one. But now it's pretty much traditional to play the shorter ending. I mean, it's only shorter by 2 measures. Mm-hmm. But that's what pretty much everybody is playing, and it's a perfect ending to that movement.
Béla Bartók's Violin Concerto number 2. Do you get to play it? I know Le Preludes is a standard, but this one, do you get to program this one very often?
Not very often. I mean, you have to have the perfect violinist.
Yeah.
Like Elena is the perfect violinist for this, to be able to program this. And also, I think having this with a major Brahms symphony in the program is a good idea because they balance out one another mm-hmm. somehow, and they're a good fit.
And we do have the big Brahms number 1. Poor old Brahms, bless his heart. He wanted to compose a symphony. He knew everybody was giving him a hard time, pressuring him to write a symphony. Why don't you write a symphony? And he felt intimidated by the past, by Beethoven specifically. So then he finally got around to writing the symphony number 1, which one critic referred to as Beethoven symphony number 10.
And what was the name of the critic?
Haslick, yeah, that guy.
That guy, exactly. So nobody remembers. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Maybe that one sentence that it's like Beethoven 10. Yeah, I mean, I understand why he waited. He was over 40, I think, when he wrote
43,
this.
43, yeah.
Yeah, which I think is a great age. I'm 41, mm-hmm. so yeah,
that's young.
I'm ready for my first symphony. Mm-hmm. But also, you know what? The story I really like about Brahms is that he actually burned all the music of his own that he didn't think was worthy enough. So everything we know from Brahms now, you know, there is never going to happen that we're going to discover another Brahms piece in someone's attic, because he would burn it if mm-hmm. he thought it wasn't up there where he wanted it to be. So this is really the top of what he produced, and the symphony is just among the most perfect compositions you get in symphonic, you know, literature, or in Western symphonic music anyway. There is a little bit lightness in it, you know, the third movement. A few moments where Brahms, I think, is really, really happy. And a little bit of the voice, the sound of Mendelssohn appears there to me, at least. So that tradition also shines through that piece. But Brahms 1 is, you know, one of the major mountains you need to climb, mm-hmm. and do it again and again and again. And I've done it a couple of years ago, and now it's really great to revisit it.
maybe you hear a little bit of Beethoven in that, just a little bit.
Oh, yeah, yeah, and why not? Uh-huh. I mean, we all come from somewhere, yeah. Especially in an art form where you actually learn the art itself by playing other people's music mm-hmm. at first, and then you get to write your own.
Brahms Symphony No. 1 will conclude the Huntsville Symphony Orchestra's season for this year, and Brahms comes back for the next season as well.
Yeah, I thought we should start talking about next season, which we named Journey, because we're taking you around the world with the help of music, of course. You don't have to leave Huntsville, and hopefully you can drive from home to the VBC to get to our concert, unless it's really snowing and there's ice on the roads, like we experienced
last time,
this
yeah.
February. And so we end our next season, which is almost a year from now, by going to Germany with a small Brahms festival, and on the program, Brahms Symphony No. 3 and the Violin Concerto with Nicky Choi, a wonderful young violinist playing. And on the same weekend, we are doing our Casual Classics No. 3 with Brahms Serenade No. 1. We were just talking mm-hmm. offline about you know, Brahms and how he waited to write his first symphony, but he wrote orchestral pieces before that, and the two serenades are among them, and they are just like a symphony. I mm-hmm. mean, this piece is, you know, 50-minute long, amazing piece of music. We are playing a 12-player version of it, because originally he wrote it for a chamber ensemble, and then he orchestrated it for big orchestra. And we're going back to one of these versions. I mean, there are some versions out there. People redid it or refinished it based on sketches, because we don't have the original. And we also have our wonderful musicians play all around town. If you remember what happened this season when we opened our 60th season with the Symphony Week. Mm-hmm. This is what we're going to do next year as well, and we're going to have chamber groups playing Brahms all over town. So that's going to be fun. Before that, in March, we are going to the Americas with the help of Canadian Brass. In
yes.
case you didn't know that, our principal trumpet player, Chris Coletti, plays with Canadian Brass, so there we have a personal connection there. Mm-hmm. And I actually managed to pick pieces from South America, Central America rather. Arturo Marquez Danzo No. 2, which
I really like that piece, yeah.
Very popular, it's a great piece.
And we
piece.
Have it in our library.
Oh, I'm glad you have that. Well, here's another one, Bramwell Tovey, how about that?
Uh-huh.
Manhattan Music, which was composed for Canadian Brass and
in fact,
Orchestra.
The Canadian Brass guys gave me that CD themselves.
Oh, that's why you have it.
Mr. Dallenbach gave me that CD.
But it's a great piece. Mm-hmm. Bramwell Tovey is a Canadian composer and conductor, and he wrote this piece for Canadian Brass and Orchestra, and we're going to end that concert with Bernstein's Divertimento, which is one of my personal favorites, with the famous Turkey Trot in it, and mm-hmm. the great, great music, great collection of everything that Bernstein could do with the orchestra. In February 2016, we're going to go to Eastern Europe and play some Enescu, Romanian Rhapsody No. 1, some Gregory Voida, a concerto for three drummers.
We don't have that in our library.
you will have it now after February. Two of our musicians from the orchestra, Robert Hudson and Timpani and Sean Ritten, our bass drum, are going to be playing, and we have an amazing drum set player, Gergő Borlai, coming in, because this piece is written for a drum set, a timpani set, and one concert bass drum and orchestra. It's going to be a world premiere. And in the second half of the concert, we are playing Dvorak Symphony No. 8, mm-hmm. which to me, right after 9, it was actually my first or second favorite symphony of Dvorak. And it's just amazing, amazing music. We go to Turkey in January 2016,
sort of,
an imaginary Turkey anyway, Abduction from the Seraglio by Mozart. We're going to play a concert version of the opera. Ron Roberts is going to be narrating and participating as Pasha as well.
He's a fun guy, yeah. I like Ron.
And I was just talking to him and encouraging him to create his own version of the narration. I mean, you know, the story is, yeah, it's a fun story, it's a comic opera, but I think it's better if you have someone there up on stage whom you know and you want to hear it. I want to hear it, the story of Abduction from the Seraglio told by Ron Roberts.
And Ron is one of the funniest people I know. He's one of those people, we can't even look at each other without laughing. We just get so tickled at each other. He's just a great guy and he'll be fantastic on stage.
You will hear some singers that you know are Christy Weber, who is playing in the orchestra, she's going to be singing. Two singers from the George Urbanos production are going to be back. So it's going to be a lot of fun.
Okay.
And then in November 2015, it's Beethoven and Bruckner weekend because, first of all, we are doing our first casual classics on that weekend, paired with a classical concert. And Kirill Gerstein, an amazing pianist, is here, who's going to be playing Beethoven Piano Concerto No. 4. On the second half of the same concert, we're playing Bruckner Symphony No. 4. So we
I know Hutter will be excited.
Yes.
Hutter actually called and requested Bruckner. He said, play some Bruckner. All right, sure, I'll be happy to.
And I was surprised to learn that this orchestra either hasn't played it for a very, very long time or never. This number four, which apparently is Bruckner's most popular, or among the most popular symphonies anyway. And on the same weekend, we're playing Beethoven Quintet for Winds and Piano with Kirill and myself having a conversation at Roberts Hall about Beethoven in general and about that particular piece. Well, I jumped over Casual Classics 2 because it's not related to any of the classical concerts. We just call it Telemann at the Table, and it's going to be at the Depot Roundhouse on March 6, 2016, where we play two Telemann suites. One of them is the Alster Echo, which is a very funny and fun piece. It was a man-made lake at Alster, and Telemann composed the piece with all the sounds that you hear around the lake. And we have four French horns put in the four corners of the room. And so I was trying to, again, find a piece of music that fits that amazing space. I like that space so much, the roundhouse.
I heard so many great things about the brass concert that was there. People love that.
And it you know, if you pick the music right, I think it works for that space really well. Next season starts with music from England. Benjamin Britten, Peter Grimes, the Force Interludes and Passacaglia on the first half, and a big major work, Symphony No. 1, a C Symphony by Ralph Vaughan Williams for soprano, baritone, and chorus. So we're starting the season with a big choral work in English, really great, powerful music. We will have super titles just so you can follow the story, and we have the community chorus, and it's actually based on Walt Whitman's Leaves of Grass. Mm-hmm. So there is great literary connection there as well, but it's going to be C Symphony from England. Pops concerts are going to be taking us to Las Vegas, New Orleans, and London. Mm-hmm. That's London, England. The Halloween Magic, which is going to be a live illusionist on stage in October, and then New Orleans, a tribute to Louis Armstrong. That's the New Year's Eve concert. And then Diamonds Are Forever, because my name is Bond, James Bond. Guest artist
Hilary
Cole.
Everybody's
going to
start humming the tune now. Yeah. Let's all sing it to ourselves.
It's all the James Bond music on February 6, 2016. So that's going to be our trip, our journey around the world with the help of the symphony.
Those brochures are available. You can just go to hso.org and ask for a brochure, and they'll stick it in the mail for you. That's also where you can find out more information about Saturday's concert on a high note. And we forgot to mention another high point. Coming up this evening at 5 o'clock on the stage there at the VBC, the violinist will be doing a master class. This is a great opportunity if you're a music student or you have a music student in your home, just to see how she interacts with the select students and really get insight into her work.
You know, I went to part of the master class of Ellen Baer, principal tuba player of the New York Philharmonic, during our last classical week, because I'm interested. I mean, you know, I'm an instrumentalist myself, and it's amazing to me how people playing different instruments are saying the same thing about how to approach music and how to breathe. Mm-hmm. So there are a lot of things in common between these instruments, even the tuba and the violin, believe it or not. So I'm actually going to be going to rehearsal an hour early so I can listen to Elena's masterclass a little bit.
And speaking of rehearsals, the Saturday one is open at 11 o'clock.
As usual, yeah. If you like to see a work in progress and hear, mm-hmm. then please do come and participate. And if you want to introduce a friend of yours, a child of yours, a grandparent of yours to classical music, this is the perfect thing to do, because, you know, it's casual. Mm-hmm. You come there to the rehearsal, listen to what we do. You get to listen to the great music, and and just enjoy.
You can sit where you want, and if your kids get wiggly, you can get up and go feed the ducks across the street at Big Spring Park. I've done that, I know. So thank you so much for another outstanding season. We're looking forward to next season with the Huntsville Symphony Orchestra. Thank you, Gregory Voida. We'll listen now to this piece. You want to talk a little bit about Till Eulenspiegel?
Well, that was the last piece of the last concert we did with Alan Bear. And Till Eulenspiegel is a little bit me, and I think all troublemakers around the world, you know, including conductors. It's a 15-minute long symphonic poem about Till Eulenspiegel, who is a fairy tale figure and who gets into all kinds of trouble. He actually gets executed at the end of the piece, which doesn't sound very fun, but it's written in a very funny way. I mean, it's a funny piece of music, and it's just an amazing little example of how great composer Richard Strauss was.
Here is the Huntsville Symphony Orchestra, conducted by Gregory Voida. Is that right? Is Gregory Voida? Thank you.